We here at In the Money Media, very happy to be partnering with Santa Anita, helping sponsor some of their great contest activity that's happening this meet. To get all the details, you can go to santaanita.com/contest. That's the screen you're seeing up there through this live stream right now. I'll just give you a very quick overview of the contest we're talking about. The $5,000 Showviver is back. You can play in Santa Anita's free online game. Select one horse a day to compete for prize money across five different categories. Play for free, santaanita.com/contest. Also, the $14,000 Santa Anita Pick'em is back. This is an online contest mixing popular sports props, including horse racing and football, offered every Saturday and Sunday for a chance to win $1,000 per contest. Once again, santaanita.com/contest. And Santa Anita Long Bend, one of the leaders in contest play for live bankroll players. You can compete against the best and win in Santa Anita's handicapping tournaments. Opening weekend, we've got the $4,000 opening weekend challenge. Estimated prize pool over $66,000. You can play on ExpressBet or on track to go after a $5,000 bonus there. Once again, full schedule for all these contests. You can probably say it with me at this point. SantaAnita.com/contests. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Media Santa Anita Meet Preview Show slash dive into Saturday, opening Saturday at Santa Anita Handicapping Show. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fortitel, back from the Big A and back in the Brooklyn Bunker. Once again, much more comfortable in my Santa Anita Park t-shirt here and very, very pleased to be joined by a talented panel. We will start with the man in the quadrant right across from me. Did I look the right way? No, of course I looked the wrong way. That's the way I need to look. To look at the man who's been doing such a fantastic job covering Southern California over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com. He is Dean Kepler. Dean, how are things?
Hey, guys. How are you? Good. Very good.
Beneath Dean, we have a guy who is one of his many roles on these shows is to come in at the beginning of meets and in his role as the RaceLens power user, help us point to trends that might help us as horse players throughout the course of said meetings. He's also a pretty darn good handicapper horse player himself. He's Matt Fagvolgi. Matt, what's going on?
Not much, Pete. Good to be with you. Glad to be back on the airwaves. And Santa Anita's back, which is great.
And our third guest, somebody I always enjoy having on these airwaves, and she's like a Swiss Army knife. We talk about the racetracks all over the country. She's always a pleasure to have on. Did such a fantastic job on TV this summer on the Colonial Downs meet. Was at Parks last weekend. But tonight, she's turning her attention to Southern California and the great race place. She is Jessica Paquette. Jessica, what's up?
You know, I've been called a lot of things in racing. A Swiss Army knife is new. I like it.
It fits, right?
I've been called worse.
Let's start off with an evergreen question for the team. We're going to dive into this late pick five, and we'll do the stakes races on Saturday that fall outside of that. But I want to start off just with some more general thoughts about this upcoming Santa Anita meet. Dean, you've been following Southern California racing this year as closely as anybody. Are there any particular angles or horses to watch, jockeys to watch, trainers to watch, you know, anything in particular you're looking forward to betting or following at this Santa Anita meet?
Yeah, I guess I could start off by saying, the angles, I'm a big trainer angle guy. The angles that may have been successful at Del Mar over the summer don't necessarily transfer over to Santa Anita. Guys that did well in certain situations, when it comes to Santa Anita, it's, they're only going a few miles, but, the angles certainly change. And, one guy in particular I could, use as an example is Peter Miller, with first-time starters, who usually does very well. And, the last 2 years, he's 0-for-19 at Santa Anita. Something that people wouldn't, normally wouldn't think. But, for me, it's to concentrate on the trainer angles that are productive for, this specific meet, which is, a major, major asset here. And I think, you should really start there. As far as, the guys that do well, you know, Juan Hernandez, the usual suspects, Alberto Rispoli on the grass, Bravo on the grass. Those guys seem to transfer, you know, over well as far as overall stats. But when you get to the, you know, like the nitty gritty, first off the claim, first time starters, you know, you really got to narrow your search down to, you know, Santa Anita specifically.
And if you don't want to do the work and want to let Dean do that work for you, you can find him. He's going to be appearing in the handicapping section on SantaAnita.com, where you can find other terrific handicappers, including In the Money adjacent Frank Scatone over there. Or you can go directly to InTheMoneyPodcast.com and read him there. Matt, you're somebody I know, a big believer in trainer stats and meat-specific ones. You've certainly, over the last few years, been espousing the benefits of Umberto Rispoli on the grass out in Southern California. Has the crowd, I know you pay attention to this stuff, has the crowd caught up at all? Or is this still somebody who you will basically throw in blind in a pick sequence if it's an open race because he still does so well?
I don't necessarily say it would be blind, but yeah, he's fantastic on the turf. I think he's going to be, he does great over at Santa Anita as well. So I don't think much changes there. I think the public has caught on more in Santa Anita than they have at Del Mar. I don't know if it's just the competitiveness of that colony or just the meet itself. But, you know, I'll give you, like, you know, specifically if you look at him at a mile and a turf at Santa Anita, for his career there out of 277 starts, he's 22% with a minus 2% ROI. That even that's negative ROI, I think it's fantastic because you've really seen – the public gravitate towards him. So he's definitely a jockey you want to pay attention to, and especially at that mile distance. He saves ground. He makes one big run late. I think that's a guy you definitely want to look at. I would actually upgrade Juan Hernandez above him. If you asked me to pick one guy, I would say it would be Juan Hernandez, just because how well speed plays at Santa Anita. He's an aggressive jockey. If you project it on the lead and you have JJ aboard, you got to look at him, right? And the second thing is, if you're looking at a jockey switch to Juan Hernandez with a horse that I think should be more forwardly placed, I think that's also another big signal as well. And, you know, you look at, like, if you, for instance, you look at dirt routes projected on the lead, horses that have hit the lead at first call. I mean, you're looking at, you know, 30% winners out of 120 race sample last year and a positive 1% ROI. So, yeah, again, speed is very good at Santa Anita, especially on the dirt, and you want to have JJ aboard there in your picks. A couple ones I'll throw in real quick. Shippers from Kentucky Downs over the last 3 years are 0-14.
Interesting.
I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
And another one too that caught my eye was if you look at Jonathan Wong, or you look at Wong shipping in on the turf, so outside of Santa Anita shipping in, 0-19 last year. So I thought those were two things that kind of jumped out at me that were a little bit surprising, especially the Kentucky Downs one. I don't know. I think the public might look at that as tougher circuit, you know, I don't know.
The money.
Yeah, exactly. And again, running for big money, and those horses might take a ton of money too. So I thought that was interesting. I wanted to give that one out.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, it's small enough that it could be small sample size, but I mean, just logically, there's such a tremendous difference between the galloping nature of the Kentucky Downs turf course and the tighter, firmer Santa Anita, where, you know, it's all about being able to show speed and quicken. So maybe there is some signal in it. Definitely something to, I wouldn't be, let me put it this way. Based on that data, I probably wouldn't be singling horses in those categories. Jessica, I want to bring you in as we approach the Santa Anita meet. Anything in particular you're looking forward to seeing or betting?
Well, this is sort of the time of year where those slower developing two-year-olds are starting to make their debut, and we could be seeing some real triple crown season implications. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, the first-time starters for the usual suspects, the Bafferts, the Mandelas, these well-bred two-year-olds that didn't get rushed early in the season, maybe didn't make Del Mar, and now we're going to see what they're made of.
Yeah, that's a great point. And we've seen this, and I think we're going to see it at the Churchill meet too, and certainly in Southern California, as trainers change the way that they're doing business and the way that Derby points are awarded now. It just seems to reward horsemen and women who are bringing these horses out later. Any particular sires you're looking for, whether they're cow sires or just anybody who's impressed you in particular that you might give a little bit of extra credit to, Jessica?
So I get suckered in by every honor code I see. I know. I know. They're not running early. They're not really running late either. But they're really pretty when they do it. I always get seduced by that this is going to be the next like heir to the APND line. Those are where my eyes always go. But, you know, of course, we're going to see the intimate shifts, these big prominent stallions with big expensive babies that run to their price tag.
I mean, what Justify's been doing out there and in general.
Surprising me a little bit by how much they are hitting the ground running.
And I like Honor Code too, but I do think, right, it is, you know, not unlike him. Time and distance are their friends.
Yeah.
For sure. Few ideas to look forward to when it comes to the general portion of the Santa Anita meet. But let's get down into some brass tacks. Let's do some handicapping, starting off with race number 3 on Saturday, which is the Grade 2 John Henry Stakes. We're going 1.25 miles on the turf. We've got a field of 6 going postward. Jessica, we'll reverse the order I've been asking questions in so far, and we'll start with you. Who's your idea of the winner of the John Henry?
This race kind of shakes down to who goes to the lead. And I think Master of Foxhounds is really the only horse with some useful tactical speed, and I think he winds up with everything his own way. I don't feel like I'm really reinventing the wheel here, but I feel like Rispoli will be able to take advantage of a race that does lack some true speed, and I expect him to be pretty forwardly placed.
That makes sense. In the main competition, at least according to the morning line, Gold Phoenix, one who might have some work to do to get to Master of Foxhounds, who could get very brave out there. Dean, is that how you see it? What's your pick for the John Henry?
Yeah, I also agree with Jessica. I also like Master of Hounds. You know, Phil D'Amato's got, you know, half the field here, but I think he can reverse the decision on the one Gold Phoenix, especially the fact that he's going to be out there on the lead. And I think Gold Phoenix may have too much to do late, but I think the race certainly runs through D'Amato here.
Matt, can we make it a chorus?
We will. I'm also a fan of Master of Foxhounds, just as Jessica said. About pace, I think this horse gets to the lead, and I think I think Rispoli takes him at a reasonable pace. If you had the D'Amato Rispoli square on your bingo card for me tonight, you won. That's obviously a connection that I'm always looking for. They do tremendously well together. And it's, you know, not because a Foxhound lives in my house as well. I think it's a horse that can get to the lead and not stop. I do like Gold Phoenix a little bit though. I think could save ground, get a nice trip. It could be heard from late, but a lot of my play will go through Master of Foxhounds.
And you think you can lock it up with those two? That's the impression I'm getting from you.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to race number 5. We've got the Grade 2 City of Hope. We're 1 mile on the turf this time around. A 6-pack going postward once again. Matt, we'll keep it with you. What do you think is going to happen in here?
I looked at a couple in here. I'll start with the 5, Prince Obama, as I say it. I think the horse needs to step up for sure, but I thought it had a nice win off a long layoff. You know, proven to close in a slow pace. Which I do like, and I think it's going to be slow today. So I do like that. And I thought it was a tough, you know, allowance race. I thought it was really tough that this horse is coming out of. So I'm against the favorite here. So I'm against the 3, Beyond Brilliant. I think the 1 is also interesting as well. Might have a little bit too much to do, but a horse that I really do like and I think could be a big player in this race is Prince of Bama, number 5.
What is your knock on Beyond Brilliant, who, you know, looks potentially loose in here, looking at the Timeform US speed figures anyway?
I just think in terms of my figures, I think this horse is trending a bit in the wrong direction, and I think it could get caught. I just think if you break down my pace figures and you look at lengths to make up in the stretch, Prince Obama has a great late pace figure, and I think is reasonable in terms of where this horse lays to make up those lengths in the stretch. Again, I could be wrong. This is a shot I would like to take where I think that a horse could be, basically ready to throw in a clunker. I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen, but when I look at figures like that, that kind of speaks to me a bit of I want to look to someone else. And I think the 5 Prince of Bomb is going to do it.
When you have reasons to bet against a horse who's going to presumably be a big favorite, that's when you're supposed to do it. Dean, let's bring you in here. Where do you stand on Beyond Brilliant and the rest?
Yeah, I wish I could say I had something creative, but, you know, I'm on the favorite here. I really think he's going to get a clear lead in here. He's a multiple graded stakes winner. I know it's his buyers at least are going in the wrong direction here, but I just can't see anybody catching him here. You know, probably for exactly behind possibly the 1 or the 2 horse. The 2 is on the improve. He steps up into graded stakes competition today, but I liked his effort last time. It was a strong strong runner-up effort in the Del Mar Mile. But, you know, I hate to pick a 6-5 shot on top here, but I just think he gets the lead and keeps on going.
3-1-2 for Dean, it sounds like, in the City of Hope. Jessica, break the tie. Are you with Beyond Brilliant or against?
What do you think? I'm against.
That would have been my guess. Contrarian, rugged contrarian that you are.
I just can't help myself. But I think after that last race, which was not good, let's be very clear. Like, I understand his accomplishments do put him a little bit above this field, but that race, if he runs that sort of effort again, no thank you. And there's no indication that he's really going to rebound off of that. Sometimes a horse's form just kind of goes the wrong way. And I'm looking for a horse who is kind of trending in the right direction, where I landed on Iridio, who I think is kind of interesting. I had a really fascinating conversation this summer at Colonial with Ignacio Correas about these horses coming in from Argentina or other South American places where sometimes they just need some time to acclimate. It's a different way of racing. It's a different way of being asked. It's less like acclimating to the climate. It's just the way of going and the running style. And I'm going to give this horse the benefit of the doubt and say maybe that's what he needed. His first couple of starts really were not very good, but he seems to have figured it out and put it all together. And his last couple of races, I think this is a horse kind of knocking on the door of that big win of his own.
Well, it would certainly be an interesting place for it to happen in the Grade Two City of Hope on Saturday. Let's move on to race number 6, the Santa Anita Sprint Championship. We've got this Grade Two for colts and geldings, and we're going 6 furlongs on the dirt. We've got a really interesting horse making a return to the races in here in the form of one time, if you can go in the way back machine here with me, one time Kentucky Derby Antipost favorite, number 2, Forbidden Kingdom. Jessica, what do you think about Forbidden Kingdom and the rest of these?
I should have worn my chalk eating weasel t-shirt for this because that's what I feel like I have to do here. I mean, I was all in. Like, I was drinking the Kool-Aid on this horse in the spring. I completely forgot he existed, though. I'm not going to lie. Like, I was going through these past performances. I'm like, oh, wow. Like, look at that. That's nice. But he's back. And I think this is a bold comeback move. This is one of those in Mandela I trust. I mean, it is sort of a bold move. 3-year-old against older horses and graded stakes company off of a big layoff. If it was most other people, that would be enough red flags for me to try to like make him a little bit vulnerable. But Richard Mandela, sure, I'm in.
And we just saw it, right? We just saw this move from him back in, well, not just, but 2019, Omaha Beach, yes. You know, very similar.
Last week, yeah.
It feels like last week. And that doesn't count. But the fact that it's such an unusual move for a trainer like Mandela, but the fact that we've seen him bring a horse back in this exact spot to run a career best, it gives me a lot of faith in this horse. So I'm 100% with you. Anything you like to go with, or is it just all about Forbidden Kingdom for you?
Single and move on.
All right. I like it. Matt, where are you with this race?
I'll jump on that train as well. I think, I think Forbidden Kingdom is the best speed in the race. It gets back to the right company. And I just think it can take him gate to wire. I think it might be simple as that. I will include another horse in this as well, because I do think Kid Corleone, the 6, could go lightly race horse. I think could show some speed, might soften Forbidden Kingdom up a little bit. If that does fall apart, I think not above the law, the 4 is interesting coming off the pace with Joe Bravo. So again, another nice late pace figure, should be reasonably close, I would say mid pack. So should be there to clean it up if it does get hot up front. So that's one other horse that I did want, but again, I'm in agreement here. I think Forbidden Kingdom is the class of the field, should get to the lead, should shake off the 6 Kid Corleone pretty easily and step away. But if it happens to collapse, I do want to include the 4 as well.
2 and 4 would be your numbers primarily in the whole.
Yeah, I go A2 and B with the 4.
Dean, what's your thought? Are you buying the hype on Forbidden Kingdom as well?
I like Matt's actually second pick, the Kid Corleone. You know, I was really impressed with his effort 2 back. After that, watching that race, I'm like, this is a stakes horse, no doubt. And I was actually a little disappointed in his last effort. He took a step backwards, but I think this horse rebounds in a big way today. If he can avoid a speed duel with Forbidden Kingdom, I think he's got a lot of talent. Like I said, visually 2 back, he was extremely impressive, you know, in my opinion. And he certainly looked like a stakes horse to me.
It's interesting. My theory on the last race, this might be one of those instances where he didn't go fast enough early. You look at pace figures in there and they were really crawling. And it might be one of those situations where it sort of invited other horses into the race. Now, I'm not saying you should go hammer and tongs with Forbidden Kingdom here, but just might be a horse that needs to ration the energy a little bit more efficiently. This is a speed horse, not a closer. And when you're a speed horse, you got to use that weapon. And so with that in mind, third off the layoff with that excuse, I don't think it's nuts to include him. I do think it might be tough situationally if Forbidden Kingdom is as good as we think he is. But I think it's an interesting idea to try to get Kid Corleone in the mix. And yeah, if they go too fast, that other runner that Matt mentioned, None Above the Law, you'd have to give a squeak. Personally, I'm with Jessica. I'm all about Forbidden Kingdom. Let's see if this one can start living up to some of that hype that was put on him this spring from those very impressive performances where he looked a little green coming back with some time off. Let's talk about the Eddie D. Race number 7, 6.5 on the turf. Grade 2 action here. Dean, we'll keep it with you.
Yeah, I'm actually, on my multi-exotic wagers, I'm just going to use two horses here, which is the 4 and 5. Both of the Phil D'Amato runners. The 5's obviously going to be a better price in here. And, his last race, I thought, was actually very good. He had, somewhat of a wide trip. He galloped out well past the winner there. He'll be the better price. But, I'm also going to include the 4, Gory Enchant, who loves it here at Santa Anita. And he's trained well coming up to this race. So those will be my two horses. And I'm not going to go any further there in that race.
Interesting one who scratched out of a spot at Kentucky Downs did Gregorian Chant to contest here instead. So that doesn't count for that stat from before, Matt. Matt, I'll ask you a general question about the downhill. I'm assuming you've done some digging into it since it made its return fairly recently. Curious if there are any angles in particular you look for on the downhill and if you can fold that answer into your idea of the winner of this race.
Yeah, there was a couple that I did look at. One is kind of this is why I love to run the models on these to see if they actually show the numbers that you hear around. And what I usually hear is take horses coming out of routes going into these downhill sprints. Right, that seems to be like the common.
I might have told you something like that with no data. Myler's cutting back do well, I would have guessed.
I mean, I ran the numbers since the downhill, going back five years, 11% winners with a negative 55% ROI.
So not so good.
Not that great. So yeah. It's one of those old, the guy at the tracks, you got to bet this. Nope, it's
the gray is in the mud. I mean, that's just.
the gray on the rainy day.
Exactly. So all those you've got to bet this is how you be successful. I don't know. I'm the devil's advocate. I like to run the numbers and see if they actually speak to me. And that was something, again, I just wanted to throw that out there. I thought that was interesting. That's a common thought going down the hill. Another thing that I think you want to look at for going down this downhill turf course is looking at horses posted to the far outside. So I ran a few different models here, and I ran one. If you're posted 7 or worse, so 7 and above, the last 5 years, we're looking at 98 starts, 21% winners with 40% or 40% of the money and a 35% positive 35% ROI. So
I mean, I would have said it was good out there. I wouldn't have guessed it was that good. That's interesting.
It just seems like you want to have that outside post to see what kind of disaster takes place in front of you, right?
Yeah. Well, also there's that little bend. There's that little right-handed turn, so that outside can kind of effectively be the inside, at least for a minute there at the beginning.
Yeah, and that's why, again, I like RaceLens for that reason, where I can bring up specifically the charts and the video from those runners. And when I look at it, it kind of seems like, even at that crossover too, where you're just able to kind of bite your time and pick your spot and make that big run late. And I think there's something there. So I do think there's something there to having that outside post 6.5 going down the hill. And I will include a horse that is posted to the outside, and that's Tango, Tango, Tango. I like Kyle up on this horse. I think probably will come off the pace, but should lay close. Won't lose touch with the field. First time sprinting here. I know I'm going to go right against that route to sprint. But again, that's why you got to take that angle of the route and then look at the composition of the horse in terms of the pace figures. I think that's where it gets a little bit different in this case. So I just think that, this horse should sit in a good spot and make one big run late. So I do want to throw that one in there. We'll use it as a B. my top play is going to be Gregorian Chan. I'm going to be obvious here, but I'll also use the two Air Force Red. I think could set the pace. It could also stalk off. It could lay close. I thought it was good last race. Chase that pace. I just think it fits well in this spot, and it could be a big player. So my top two are going to be the two Air Force Red, the four Gregorian Chant. Again, surprise Rispoli and D'Amato there. But I will throw in a little bit of the nine Tango, Tango, Tango.
I do have to point out about the way you use stats, because I really like the way you do it, where, you know, the specific stat you were talking about was actually technically anti-cutbacks, and you end up picking a couple of cutbacks. And what I like about that is just, it shows with your approach that you're using that statistical information to frame the conversation, but still not being, completely beholden to it. And it's still all about the outcome of the individual race and the way these horses face off against each other. And I just think that's a smart way of looking at stats, as opposed to, sometimes we'll have folks on and it's, they're just so beholden to the stat that it's like the brain isn't necessarily, doing all it can. So anyway, I just wanted
to trigger attention, but it should never be a blind play.
Maybe I should have just gone with making fun of you though, for giving a negative stat, but I gave you my true opinion instead.
But to be honest with you though, I have a lot of people that come back and say, well, if you just follow those stats, you'll go broke. I don't. Again, it sticks out for me to look at the horse a little bit differently, maybe to pause on what my brain is saying, like, oh, that's a must use, route to sprint here, must use. Maybe not. Maybe I got to look a little bit deeper into that horse and see if I do really think this horse has a shot. So again, stats can be great. They can find a horse that is a little dirtied up and may not think, right off the top people are going to include, but it can also go the other way too, where you may want to go against it based on the qualitative side versus just the quantitative analysis side.
Jessica, what wins the Eddie D?
I mean, I would just like to have this fascinating conversation on like different ways of handicapping and like methods to get to the same place, right? I do almost all my handicapping without a morning line, because I feel like I get sucked into like talking myself on or off a horse based on someone's math who isn't always that great. in many instances, like, and I'm not good at math. So, but it's a very interesting thing, I think, how handicappers can, a statistic should just be used to maybe put your eye in a different place, but you like not live and die by one specific thing.
I love it in conjunction with wagering strategy, honestly. We talked about this a lot on the shows, but when a stat can back you up and make you want to single that horse, or if I know it's a spread race, a positive stat will just get me to throw in something that's a big number, including long shots, or, but maybe the best of all, when it gives you a reason to really go against that favorite you kind of wanted to go against on paper anyway.
So in this race, this is probably not my strongest opinion of the legs here, so I'm going a couple deep. I do think Gregorian Chant, the one to beat, loves this turf course, working really well off of that brief freshening. And then I'm going with the two Mandela horses kind of as B selections. Laneway has become much more consistent since cutting back, and I like Goliad just on the route to a sprint cutback.
4 with 1-3 for Jessica in the Eddie D. And we'll move ahead to race number 8. We've got Winning Your In action for the Breeders' Cup Classic with the Grade 1 Awesome Again. Return to the races of Country Grammar, last seen getting his doors blown off by Flightline, but still running a very good race in the process. And if you're looking at the time form, figures a career best even in that second by 19 to give you some measure of some quantitative measure of what we saw from Flightline that day. Are you with Country Grammar in this spot, Jessica, or do you think we can beat him?
To Country Grammar's credit, I don't know if he even knew there was another horse in the race. Flightline was so far clear of these horses that he was in a separate race. And I'll give Country Grammar actually a lot of credit. He ran a dynamite race, a lot better than I actually thought he would. He's kind of shown himself to be pretty legitimate after a couple of performances that I thought were a little suspect. They were very good, but I thought he was kind of going to be vulnerable going into the second half of the year, but he's not. He's turned out to be very solid. I would not talk you off of him if you want to use him. I think Horse Like Express Train may offer a little bit more value. I think he prefers Santa Anita to Del Mar, so I'm going to give him a slight pass for those last couple of races. And he's one of those horses, just a hard-knocking, consistent type that's always capable at this level against these horses at this track.
And it was not, I mean, you know, look, he's beaten so far. Maybe this is silly to even say, but it feels like a race that between getting horrified by Flightline and the specifics of the trip and the layoff, like there's a lot of reasons why you could want to look past that. And it's true. You go back to the last figure earned at Santa Anita, and it fits nicely with these 7-2 on the morning line for Express Train. Would that be the only one you want to talk about in here, Jess?
Yeah, I'm going to use Country Grammar on my tickets. But I also do wonder, you know, this is a little old racetracky though. Like, did he get his heart broken? He got really beaten by yes. Flightline.
You see it happen from time to time where a horse just gets horrified. It takes time to come back. But I don't know. It was such a non-effort, and he has such other good races that I'd be inclined. If you have any inclination to use, I'd be inclined to go with that. Matt, what are your thoughts on the big one? Who's going to get this, all these win and you're in benefits for the Breeders' Cup coming out of this race on Saturday?
I'll be boring. I don't see Country Grammar losing this race. I mean, I think a Ferrari would have finished second at the Flightline in that race. I think Country Grammar had a great race. I thought tried and ran on. And I just think gets a softer bunch here. I think we'll just sit off the speed. I think there's two nice efforts off the layoff. Again, lost to, you know, the best horse on the planet right now. And I just think it's an easier spot and just gets a nice trip. And I just think this horse can be very, very difficult to beat. The one horse I'll throw in, and talking to a buddy of mine this morning, laughed at me for this, but I'm going to throw in the six Defunded. The other Baffert in here, I just think could be Lone Speed. It could be one of those horses that gets out to the front end and just says, oh, this horse will come back and never does. Has proven to do that. I always like that. A horse that gets out to open air and runs to it. So I'm going to use the six as a price as well, just in case this horse can step out and steal it. But I do think Country Grammar is by far and away the horse to beat in this race.
I don't think the Defunded idea is totally nuts. I mean, you go back to the Santa Anita Gold Cup, and if that race was a mile and an eighth, he probably wins it. Now, this is a tougher field, but let's say it's playing to speed, and it hasn't been typically overly at Santa Anita in recent meets, but you never know what it's going to be like. I don't think that's nuts. I would consider certainly a backup play with Defunded, despite some ropey looking recent form, we'll say.
The same guy that laughed at me for that gave me plus odds for the horse to finish last.
So. if he is an absolute win or run dead last time.
That's true. Right? Because, you know, that's the thing. I laughed at first. I said, you know what? That's an interesting bet right there.
Yeah, that's one that makes you think. Dean, what are your thoughts on the awesome again?
I should add, you know, Baffert's got four horses in here. He's won this race six times.
Seven, but who's counting?
Seven times. So, I mean, but I'm going to go in a different direction here. I actually like the two-horse a lot, Royal Ship. He was trounced like everybody else was in the Pacific Classic, so I'm really not going to hold that against him. But he's, you know, he's getting back to Santa Anita. He loves this track. And as far as pace projection, I think it's going to be pretty quick. I think he's going to that's going to work in his favor here. I think he's going to get a nice tracking trip. He's got the best time form U.S. pace figure in the field. And I especially like his 5-furlong drill here in 58-1, best of 56. So I think he's going to rebound here, and I think he's going to get a nice setup. So I'm going to go in that direction.
It's interesting, and that is not – you know, you see that work from some trainers in Southern California, and you just say, yeah, that – you know, they work them all fast. Not necessarily the case with Mandela. That workout really does jump off the page. You guys are making interesting cases for a bunch of runners in here. I think wagering strategy wise, I mean, hey, so far it looks like we can get skinny enough in other places. Maybe I can afford to go three or four deep in the biggest of the big ones, the awesome again. One more stakes race we're going to talk about. We're going down the hill one more time, this time for 3-year-old fillies. Going obviously 6.5. We've attracted a full field of 10 in this spot. What do you think, Dean, from a wagering point of view? Is this a one where we can narrow things down, or do you think you need to use a few?
I would use a couple in here, but I'm not going to have anything crazy. I'm not going to go with the morning line favorite here, Connie Swingle, the 5. She's 2-for-2 over the downhill course. 8-for-8 in the money for D'Amato. She's a stakes winner. She looks primed for another strong effort in here. If I was going to use a couple more on my ticket, it would probably be maybe the 2. And then the outside case I can make for perhaps the 10 horse, who I thought his maiden win 2 back was visually impressive. And I think he could rebound here and should offer some good value. So I would spread a little bit if I had to. I'd say the 2, 5, 10.
Yeah, 5 being the top one, though, for my note-taking purposes that I'm going to send out to our plus people, Dean.
Yes.
All right. And, yeah, Connie Swingle undefeated on the turf and has shown some real versatility as well. Matt, where's your eye drawn in the Unzip Me Stakes?
I'll go to the 5 as well, Connie Swingle. Again, just for everything Dean said, pretty much everything I had in terms of my notes there. And again, I think this course could be a horse for course specifically right here. I think is always a big play, and it does play out that way. So I think Connie Swingle is definitely the horse to beat. One horse, a couple horses I wanted to use with it as well. Pammy's Ready, I thought was interesting, the number 6. I just really like this horse at a price. I thought there were two really solid efforts off the layoff. You know, interested to see this horse get back to this distance on this course and to be off the, you know, kind of mid pack here and see if this horse can make a run in the stretch. So I did like the number 6, Pammy's Ready. Also like the 9, Island of Love a bit. You know, just posted outside again. I think we'll come off the pace. Just missed against pretty strong company, so I think it can fit really, really well here. I'll toss that last race out, and I think this horse, the body of work from this horse, is a big competitor in this race. And again, I like that outside post there, so I'm going to go 5 as a lone A, and I'm going to back up with the 9 and 6.
Agreement from Dean and Matt about the top pick. Some disagreement about other horses to use with Jessica. How do you see it?
I actually like a couple of horses, maybe at bigger prices here. Number 10, Briefcase Girl, cutting back to a sprint here, clearly wanted nothing to do with the mile last time out. I think she's going to be a little bit more effective. I think she's a really interesting filly with how inexperienced she is. We don't know how good she is. She gets a very stiff class test here, but certainly a lot of turf influence in her pedigree. Carla Gaines, Mike Smith team up here. I think this one, maybe she's not good enough, but maybe she is. I'm also going to use number 8, Tesserae. I like the cutback and distance on this horse as well. And I don't think that morning line of 12-1 is what you'll get. I think she'll probably get a little more attention than that. But she's been running against grade 1 top class company. And I do think this field came up a little less proven than that.
Definitely some interesting ideas from the team on this one, a race where I think I am going to spread. And I think the Briefcase Girl case is particularly interesting. I know we just talked about how on the stats, the cutback, not necessarily, certainly not something you're going to want to back blind, but just looking at pace figures, I like the idea of a horse coming back from the mile who, looking at pace figures, would still be positioned among your top 3. It just feels like a good situation. And you couple that with the outside, I'm going to definitely have to have some 10s on my ticket as well in the Unzip Me Stakes. We close things out with a tricky one. 2-year-old maiden special weight fillies going 6 furlongs on the turf. We've got a big full field of 12. Jessica, we'll start with you for your answer to the key question. How are we going to get paid?
Let's get paid with number 8, Pleasant Wave. Kind of an interesting debut runner. For me, when I really don't like any of the horses that have already run, go with a first-timer. They haven't disappointed you yet. At this point, as they go in the starting gate, they could be absolutely any kind. You never know. Steady Work Tab, plenty of turf influence in the pedigree. Joe Bravo really does very well on the West Coast. It was a smart move for him, particularly on the turf. Nice price of 10-1 on the morning line. I don't know if you get that, but watch the tote board, see what you get.
Yeah, and certainly one I wouldn't mind being locked into. Papa Padromo, historically, not the best numbers with first-time starters, but I think done considerably better lately. I think the Bravo in the irons is a positive, is a big shout. And I mean, I think whoever you get alive to in here, odds are, if you survive this long, a chance to get paid, as Jessica says. Matt, how about you? What numbers do you see on your tickets to close things out?
This is a tough race. This one gave me a headache for sure. I will use a couple of horses that I've run. I think the 9, Candy Caramel, is, I think, best of the horses that I've run. Again, not a whole lot of confidence there. Second try sprinting, I think, should improve against weaker company today. So we'll use the 9. I'll also use the 2, Mimita, is how you say that. Solid race last out, I thought just missed. I think the added distance will certainly won't hurt. Again, the Wong stat gives me a little bit of pause, but I'm not one that just blindly follows a cold trainer like we've talked about, Pete. That can certainly change very quickly. So, and again, I just on the damn side, Capitalism at Risk, 19% winner sprinting, with a positive 33% ROI. I will use a first time starter, the 10, was it Ragtime Rose? Cordarosa, as the down the damn side here. I thought this was interesting. 30% winners, 70% in the money, and a positive 5% ROI lifetime there. So some strong statistics there on the damn side that I usually lean on in these types of situations. You can go a lot of different directions here. I agree with Jessica. You probably want to take a shot with a first time starter. I like that line. They haven't disappointed you yet. I'm gonna steal that, which is very true, I think, with this group. But
rookies in fantasy sports and first time starters.
It's exactly.
You get a lot of screens eternal.
Yes, so you can pump in a whole lot of blue sky when you're coming to athletes, human or equine, that simply have not failed yet.
Like Dean, a first-time starter we saw today, Pete. Like a first-time starter.
Oh, wow. We're going to talk about that now. We're going to talk about that. I was going to save that for the show tomorrow.
My line about
my namesake horse, who was just beaten today. And I almost tweeted this, but I was like, I can't deal with all the hate tweets of people who aren't going to stand, who aren't going to understand that I'm being facetious. I was going to say, you know who else lost first time out? Secretariat.
The haters are going to hate Peter. Let it go.
You think I should have sent it? Or maybe I'll send it.
When in doubt, send the tweet. I mean, that always works out for people, right?
Like I said, Pete, I was in the hotel lobby.
Before the second start.
I was screaming at my phone in the hotel lobby, just saying, stay there, stay there. And then as I was done, I look up and I have people staring at me. And I was like, sorry, I have a gambling problem. I'm sorry.
I mean, everyone's been there.
I guess I hope you didn't bet as it turned out, but you was a good, I would have said to bet just because the price was a little bit, out of whack, but in all seriousness, when a lot is not expected of a first time starter, it's even though it was obviously technically disappointing to be 1 to 100 in the race and lose, I wasn't disappointed at all because you don't know if the horse can run. And then you see that and you're like, oh my goodness, we have a racehorse on our hands. So very excited to see Looms Boldly's next start. Back to business here. Dean, how are we going to close out this nightcap and pay off all our late picks?
Yeah, as much as I wanted to use a first-time starter in here, when I just ran these trainer stats on these guys, first-time starters on grass, there just wasn't anybody that jumped off the page. So having said that, I'm going to go with the price here, and that's the 4 Broadway Girls who has a race. Goes dirt to turf today for Team O'Neill. I watched her last race. She broke a step slow, kind of settled in the back of the field and made a decent belated run to grab the 4th spot. She's by Grade 1 winner Army Mule, who, although the sample's not magnificent, 10 starts, 2 wins, 2 seconds, and a 3rd, going with grass sprint prodigy. So perhaps the turf is where she wants to be. And I think she's got an upset chance in this wide field. So certainly at 12-1, I'll take a chance there.
Any you want to go with, Dean, or what's
your goal? Yeah, if I was going to spread a little bit, I'd go 4-2-9 in here. But I think this race is just screaming for a price.
Few things before we get out of here. I want to remind folks that In the Money Media, helping present these very fun free contests, are going to be at Santa Anita all meet long. To get all the details, santanita.com/contests. Dean is going to be on InTheMoneyPodcast.com and the handicapping section of SantaAnita.com every racing day. And there's a ton of other great information in there, including Frank Scatoni's matrices that you'll want to be checking out, but a lot of great stuff beyond them. As for Jessica and Matt, I'm expecting to be, because no good deed goes unpunished around here, coming on and bothering you to do some golden hour pick 4 handicapping with me. We're going to be doing the golden hours for the Saturdays of the meet and, whatever other fun coverage we feel like putting in. We got some great stakes races. It's going to be an exciting meet. We did have one listener question come in that I'll pose to the group before we close things out for real, because she's a regular listener and a fine contest player. And Trish Smith asked if anybody's worried about Flightline not making the gate at Keeneland. And all I'll say about that is, you know, all the vibes I'm hearing are positive. And, but yeah, I mean, anytime a horse only has that many starts, like, I wouldn't be rushing to take 8-13 or whatever the anti-post price is if you were able to participate in such markets, just because of that very concern. And, you know, horse players were cautious, and obviously it would be a tremendous disappointment. Can't wait to see what this horse will do, and I think he'll run. But I mean, yeah, I'd say there's a little concern. Jessica, for you, does that concern rise to the level of a full-on worry, or how would you describe it?
I think the concern is no more or no less than with any horse. We are a long way from the Breeders' Cup, and horses have a way of, like, we make plans and horses laugh. And there is so much that can go wrong to get a horse into a starting gate. Anytime anyone gets to a race is nothing short of a miracle.
I get it. Matt, how about you? Any special insight or knowledge into this question, or are you just going to see who draws on that Monday night and worry about it then?
Yeah, it's one of those you can hypothesize for hours and not know, right? you'll find out day of. But I will say, I just think a horse with that particular running style, that hard running style, could take its toll. And for me anyway, just kind of a little bit steps up the concern of that horse not making the starting gate. But just please don't bet the horse in future pools, just or any kind of advanced wagering pool that's out there overseas, or any kind of futures. Just don't do it.
But any horse can, like, you know, pop an unfortunate abscess or, like, get the sniffles. Yeah. Like, there are a thousand ways that they can find ways to, like, to disappoint us. To my point earlier,
it's just hard when they're I think to Matt's point, when they're odds on at, like, it's almost like, even if the price is 2-5, you know, even if it's significantly shorter on the day, at least you'll have been able to, like, see the last work, or even watch them go to warm up and go down to the start. And for me, that would be worth the lessening of price. Whereas with some big long shot, it's like, take a flyer. Just, you know, risk and reward terms. I get what Matt's saying for sure. Dean, what about you? You know, would this be, call him four. Let me tell you, I'd give you 4-5 right now on him in the classic. Would you want to bet that, or would you leave it alone, or would you want to book that?
Oh, absolutely at 4-5. But I'm just going to, as a fan, hold my breath and hope that he gets there in one piece. But, you know, you never know. He can spike a fever in the morning of.
Guys, really appreciate your help on tonight's show. You'll all be back on these airwaves soon. Want to thank Andrew and the rest of the team at Santa Anita. Really going to have fun working with them this fall meet. And want to thank producer Craig as well for staying up late with us and doing a great job pushing all the right buttons as usual. For a lot more, come back, santaanita.com, inthemoneypodcast.com. And we'll have some good stuff for you. And all the way through the Breeders' Cup and then even over the winter. Going to keep covering racing, and it's always fun when people reach out and ask questions. If you want to hear more from any of us, you see the Twitter handles up there on screen if you're watching on YouTube, but I'll give them to you quick if you're listening. At Looms Boldly for me, at JM Paquette for Jessica, at Kep's Corner for Dean, and at Blinkers on 2-2 for Matt. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornatel. May you win all your photos.